does get real. When real guys come, real fortune, he will raise market game changer. Does get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Third guys, you just gotta recognize I gotta pay the money, I gotta keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not gonna make it. Sometimes you gotta create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron's kids.
I do have a bit of a problem with execution. Right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's gonna be hated in Chicago. He's gonna be hated in Cleveland. He's gonna be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
Now I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's gonna be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them. Yes. Welcome. You are now on with the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. It's your man Marcus the Game Changer. I got my man D. Wills in the house. Holler at the people.
How y'all doing out there? We still doing it black and yellow for y'all. I don't want to hear anything else.
You don't like that little Wayne?
Oh, my goodness. All that junk. But that's all right. I'll give y'all this year.
Yes. We'd like to welcome the listeners who are joining us tonight. Appreciate your listening and taking the time out to hang out with the Real Sports Guys. We got a whole hell of a lot of topics tonight. First week without football. We got labor negotiations. We're finna get deep into the league. I think we got some real intriguing NBA talk on tap for tonight. I got some questions I'm going to throw at D real quick and get his expertise, his expert opinion on a few things. And then we got something that I want to try out as far as something that we can do a little bit more interactive with the listeners out there. Get on our Facebook, get on our Twitter, check us out, maybe stir up some debate. But I got some tricks up my sleeve. I'm trying to go deep into the playbook to keep you guys interested, to keep you guys engaged. So we're going to see what we can do for y'all. If you want to get on with the Real Sports Guys, the number to call in is 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to call in anytime. The only thing we ask is that you don't come weak. We hate that.
That's right.
Don't come with a weak take.
That's right.
You get the Mutombo finger.
That's right. Off the glass, as we always say. Trapped off, on the rim.
Off glass, jump ball, trapped on the rim, change of possession. So, I want to get in right away. We have some big games in the NBA this Sunday, replacing, football. So, I want to get into the NBA games right away, and then we can transition it and eventually get to talking about this whole labor thing that's going on with the NFL and whether or not we're going to have some football in 11 or not. We're going to have to see, man. That may be the last game we see in a while. So, but this past weekend, basketball was front and center. First weekend with no football, the NBA did us right, though. They had the Celtics taking on the Heat, and they balanced that out with some Lakers and Orlando Magic. Two really good games, four really good teams, four contenders. And we're going to talk about those games for a minute. For those of you out there that maybe weren't able to see the game or have been living under a rock for the last week, the Celtics beat the Heat once again, go up in the series 3-0. And, I was able to catch a little bit of the game. I wasn't able to catch the entire game. I think for D, it's the same circumstance. We got families and stuff, so, you know, our Sundays get tied up. So we catch what we can. But, you know, listening to all the analysis and then, you know, checking out different highlights and different pieces of information that are out there about the game, start to formulate your own opinion and figure some things out on your own, even if you didn't see the whole game. That's the beauty of living in 2011. You don't have to watch an entire game to get an idea of what went on in it. So I'm going to throw it out to D first. D Wills, initial impressions from the game. What do you think about these two teams going forward?
You know, I think that Miami's biggest challenge is that they don't have a way to respond to the bullies in the paint. You know, Boston's going to put a foot in the lane. They're going to force the Heat to be jump shooters. They're going to force them to push the ball side to side. And Miami has not demonstrated. If you watch them against Indiana tonight, you know, they're being aggressive getting into the lane. Wade was posting and doing some things. You know, Indiana played them tough with their size. But you can tell, you know, Bosch isn't comfortable being physical. Boston has answers for, you know, their big three for the most part in terms of forcing them laterally. And so I just think that it's one of those things where it's kind of like you're going to see the same old, you know, it's just going to be the same script every time they play. It's like one of those things where you just watch and you, like, you can already see, you know, if they meet, this is a 4-2 series. And unless they can find a way to get that ball out the net, get down there before Boston sets up and be aggressive, which is hard to do in the playoffs, and because Boston's going to give up some things to be in great defensive position. Like that, you know, it's just one of those things where it's going to be tough for them to get over the top. And I think LeBron said something like, you know, it kind of felt like when he was in Cleveland. And, you know, and some of that's that little, you know, there's a subtle frustration there for him. And so, you know, and then adding that piece of Rondo on LeBron, you know, says, okay, there's another dimension to Rondo, who is just controlling the game. You know, you and I, we always, we admit freely that, you know, what we love about doing this sports talk radio is that we're fans of other folks we listen to, and you and I are always open about who we listen to. And, you know, one of the things I love that Colin Cowherd said something about, there's a difference between generals and superstars. You know, and he calls Carmelo kind of this, a superstar. You know, he's a great player, but he's not a general.
Right.
He talks about, you know, guys that can get other folks around him to play better. And I thought that was a great analogy. And Rondo adding that other dimension, just as a general telling you, is another thing he's going to do to lead the team. And if he adds that piece where he's willing to guard, because he has some unique ability, he's willing to guard some of the best player on the court other than the point guard. Now you think about what they can do defensively if he can find a way on short spurts to harass somebody like LeBron or whatever. I just, you know, when I look at it, I just think that, you know, Doc Rivers, I said last year, y'all laughed at me, but, you know, the Thibodeau is gone, the defensive guru is gone, and they're still finding ways to adjust and do things. I mean, Doc, I think, is just, you know, with his staff, is just one step ahead of them. And Boston just looks like, you know, even though they had that little slip with the Lakers, just look like, you know, even when you're not healthy, Paul Pierce scored, what, 1 point or something like that?
Yeah, he was 0-10 from the field.
0-10 for the field.
First time in 10 years.
In 10 years, and they still get you? That's got to frustrate you. Like, if you said that at the beginning of the game, would you think, well, Miami got a chance to win this one, or Miami going to win it? Yeah, but that tells you how many different ways Boston can beat Miami. And part of it is the dog factor. Miami, other than Wade, you know, Bron's got it, but especially Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh is not that dog. Well, he's got.
I told you he was the one. I told you he was the one. We didn't know where he was.
To beat Boston, he got to be like, I'm not going to say quite Barkley, but he got to be that kind of cat who's willing to get body contact. And because he can beat. He's the one guy, if he did have dog in him, that Boston would have trouble matching up, because he might be a little quicker than some of the guys who could get out of space. He could do some things. You know, if he had Garnett on him, he still could score. If he had a little bit more aggressiveness, he could chip away and get to the line in ways that would open the game up for everybody else. And he just does not have it. He didn't even have it tonight against Hansborough. And Matt, they need him. You know, he can play the way he wants to play against Washington, the Bucks, and some of these other teams. But against those elite teams, he got to bring that. And that's the one thing he doesn't bring for him. And LeBron doesn't have a good enough post game right now to make up for that. And that's the problem. The only other person who's really coming like that is Wade. They need one other guy. They need one of those other guys to develop some kind of sense of attack mode in the lane. And LeBron just doesn't have a strong enough post game at this point in his career to be that person. So you've got to have somebody like Bosh who can do it. So hopefully I hit enough on that one.
Yeah, I think you covered a lot of ground on that one. You know, I'll throw my two cents in because that's what I do. You know, I watching the game, the Celtics are the team to beat, I think, in the league right now. Again, San Antonio's got the best record, but I'm not buying them right now. I don't think they have enough size. I don't think they have enough experience with that supporting cast. They got a lot of young guys, and those young guys haven't been in those big games yet. And until they show me that they can play in those big games, I'm hard-pressed to invest in that particular team. I feel like the Celtics are the favorites right now. I think they have everything going for them. They're not at full strength. Shaq ain't back. Jermaine O'Neal ain't been back in a while. They still don't have Delonte West integrated into what they do. Marquise Daniels is out. I mean, they still got a lot of bullets in the holster, you know, and they still got a lot of time to really get to clicking at all cylinders. You know, KG is back to playing well. He's healthy. Perkins looks like he's back, you know, doing what he does. You know, Ray Allen is having one of the best seasons he's had in a couple years. Paul Pierce is and I think the beauty of it is that their big three, their games age so well. I mean, KG has such versatility to his game that his game, you know, even as he's getting up there in years and he's putting a lot of miles on them knees and them ankles, his game and what he does is so fundamentally sound that even as his athletic ability isn't what it used to be, he can still play this game. And I think the same thing with Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce, he has one of those games that you can play as a 40-year-old at the YMCA. You can use a lot of what Paul Pierce does, you know, as a, you know, you can see a cat at the YMCA in his 40s with a couple knee braces on and, you know, some rec specs, doing a lot of what Paul Pierce does with the up and under fakes and, you know, the stiff leg step backs and those kind of things. He's got a lot of stuff in his game. You know, Paul Pierce has got a lot of stuff in his game. And Ray, man, he got a lot of stuff in his game, man. You can get Paul Pierce the ball pretty much anywhere on the court, and he's gonna do what he want to do. You know, that's one of those cats that you say he's got a lot of stuff. You know, you ask him where you get the ball, where you want the ball. You ask Paul Pierce where you want the ball. It don't matter. I got a lot of stuff I can do. You know? He got a lot of stuff in his game. You know? But then you got Ray Allen, who, I mean, shooting is one of those skills that never goes away. You know, as long as he's healthy and them lower extremities stay healthy, Ray could play for another 2 or 3 years and do what he's doing. You know? As far as the Heat go, I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think the thing that Boston does, Boston has the mental and psychological advantage over the Heat right now. I think there were some comments made by D-Wade where he likened it. He said it's a part of the process, and he likened it to Jordan having to get past the Pistons. And that's a valid comment. But at the same time, y'all didn't say when y'all was having y'all little rap concert that we was going to win, you know, 7-8 championships after the Celtics got too old. They didn't say all of that. They said that they was going to come in winning, you know, 6, 7, 8 championships, and that was going to start this year. So y'all was saying the hell with the process at that point. Now y'all talking about it's all about the process. But anyway, that's them being them, man. they're mentally soft like that. Like, now that they see that ain't nobody going to run from them and ain't nobody going to bow down to them, they don't know how to handle, they don't know how to play from that position. They don't know how to play from a position of, actually, we're better than y'all, you know, and we know we're better than y'all. And, you know, when you were on a team by yourself, we would admit to hell, you was a great ball player, but we knew the rest of your team sucked. Now that y'all all together, y'all think y'all got a good team, and what we ought to show y'all is that we're actually a great, we're an amazing team, and you guys were better as individual parts as far as being able to do what you want to do against us. I think Boston just beats them up. Mentally, physically, Boston doesn't let anybody move without putting a body on them. You don't get to cut through the lane on Boston free. They don't let you do that. And those kind of things wear on you.
Right.
The other thing about this game that really got me is that, you know, at the end of the day, I think LeBron knows what he is. LeBron knows he's a facilitator. And at the end of the game, a lot of times you see him kicking those shots out. You see him kicking those shots out to guys and allowing the other players to finish. Now, again, that was my big critique of the team is, are these other guys going to be able to step up in big moments? So far, Eddie House has hit some big shots, but the rest of these cats are still waiting seeds. You know, and that includes Bosch, and that includes Wade to an extent. You know, are they going to be able to knock down those shots in pressure situations when they don't have the ball and they're catching, when they're in a catch-and-shoot situation? So, you know, I think that it said a little bit. I think the biggest thing was that the Celtics got the tiebreaker. And I think that was the biggest thing that came from it. We got a caller on the line. I want to get this caller on real quick. Caller, are you there? Hello, caller?
Hello.
Hey, Ray.
It's Ray.
Oh, shit.
Glad to be back from hunting goose in a turkey.
Oh, man, my man is back. Three-man booth in full effect, baby. What's up with your partner?
Nada. I'm just listening to y'all, D-Wade. Listening to your breakdown of the Heat.
Yeah.
And laughing, and of course laughing.
Yeah, so did you get a chance to catch the game?
No, I didn't catch the game. I don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't catch the game. I should have tuned in and watched it. But, you know, until these teams really meet when it's the playoffs, you know, I think that's what the Heat think, you know. When it gets to be the playoffs, we'll be okay. And I think what's going to happen is that Boston is going to bully them that much more. As these games progress, as these games, you know, go on, if they don't find that edge, if they don't come up with a way to beat Boston handily, whenever they want to, it's kind of like, you know, when Jordan played the Celtics or when Jordan played the Pistons, you know, until the Heat come up with that way just to beat them every time they go out, they're going to have their hands full with Boston because Boston still has the upper hand.
I think the Heat still haven't figured out who's going to take those shots. Like,
right.
You know, who's going to take that last shot? Who's going to have the ball? And this is a question I wanted to throw out. Now that we got Ray on, I want to get his take on this also. You know, I was thinking about LeBron and why he's always giving up the ball. And I think the whole reason he made the decision he made was because he thought he needed better teammates. And he needed better teammates because he knows he's a great facilitator. You know, I think he understands that he understands what he is, I think, better than we as the viewing basketball general public understood what he was at the time. You know,
sure.
We likened him to a Jordan or a Kobe when he probably saw himself as, I need to have guys around me that I can give the ball up to. Because I think if you look at LeBron, probably the thing that he's the most elite at is his passing. You know, his rebounding is okay. His shooting is okay, but his passing is phenomenal. And he may be the greatest passer as a small forward, you know, to ever play the game. The other thing that I think makes LeBron special is that I would say he's probably a top five mismatch of all time. And what I mean by that is if you put this player on the court, nine nights out of ten, he's going to have a guy who is either too small to guard him or too slow to guard him, you know. And so I was trying to think of, and this is where I want you guys to help me out. I was trying to think of where would he fit if you were to pick, historically, your top five all-time league mismatches. Who would they be? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand.
Sure. Magic Johnson.
Who would you all put in that category?
I would certainly put Magic Johnson in that category. Magic Johnson was the first 6'8" point guard.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Night in, night out, he's making the other coach have to put either a guy who's too small or a guy who's big enough but too slow on him, or a guy who's big enough. You know, every night he's a matchup problem. These are all-time matchup problems. I think LeBron is in that top five of all-time matchup problems, if not the top three.
True.
Another guy is Wilt.
I think
Wilt was just there wasn't anybody else on his level.
Right. He was just too much for anybody out there, except for Russell. You know, Russell knew how to play him.
Yeah.
Oscar would be
And Russell had a good team around him too, but
yeah, and I think Shaq in his prime was
and had good knees.
Yeah. Shaq in his prime was one of those guys too. There wasn't anybody who could really do anything with Shaq for about 7-8 years. And that was when he was playing in the era with the Kings and the David Robinsons and the Patrick Ewings, and they really couldn't do nothing with him.
I would say Oscar, and another guy that would come up to list people right now is Bernard King.
Mm.
Because I think Bernard King was a matchup nightmare. You couldn't figure out who to put on him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a small cat. He's taking down the box, going to work on him. You put a little bigger guy, he's going to play out of space a little bit. I mean, Bernard, I remember watching him play against the Pistons. They tried to figure out if put Chico on him, hit him for 60. And then he came back. I would say LeBron is probably that kind of guy. Another guy I would like to catch a guy that's off the radar a little bit. Mark Aguirre was that way. They didn't know what to do with Mark either. They didn't know how to guard him. Aguirre was that way as well, particularly early.
Chuck was that way too.
Chuck was that way. Childs was hard to figure out in terms of magic.
You know, another one that I think people may not put on their list, and this is one thing I'm going to challenge our people on Facebook, is to give me their top five matchup problems all time, the top five matchup problems. But another person that may be on some people's list is Dirk.
Yeah, Dirk would be another one.
You know, Dirk is another one who, doing what he can do at 7 feet and being able to play away from the basket, his post-up game isn't as vicious as it could be against smaller guys, but he has a nice mid-range game that can serve as a post-up type game. And he can still get a shot off over a smaller guy, but he just doesn't get to the line like he should at that size.
Yeah, I was trying to think of I would say Dirk is definitely in that category.
But I want to go back for a second, Marcus, when you were talking about LeBron being a facilitator. I think that right now he's playing that role because he hasn't stepped into that role of just being a truly dominant player. You know, there were just players that at the end of the game, you just knew they were going to get the ball, and you knew they were going to shoot, and everybody in the house knew they were going to shoot, and if they missed it, you know, they walked into the locker room, you know, knowing they did all they could, you know. LeBron.
Yeah, I don't know, I don't think he has a go-to shot yet.
That may be.
You know what I mean? Like, what's his signature shot? What's his go-to shot at this point? I don't think he has one.
Well, I would say he played that role pretty good in Cleveland. I think with this team, after all those years in Cleveland, I think he realized, and I think back to what you're saying, Marcus, that part of his thing going to Miami was that he wanted to accentuate this other aspect of the game that kind of got lost. I think it was more part of his game in his first couple of years
But the more he had to take on the scoring role, which I think he adapted to, but he wasn't most comfortable with it. I think going to Miami was about elevating. I think he sees himself as an all-around player. Even in high school, there were times when he was giving the ball up when he probably could have shot every time down the floor. Where he I remember him being asked the question, you know, if you score 15 points and you win, and you win the game, you know, what, how would you feel about that? And LeBron was basically, it's like, you know, I play this to win. You know, I don't need to shoot to win. If we win, that's the most important thing. So you already had that sense that, you know, he kind of had that magic. That's what people, I always felt he was more like Magic than everything else. I mean, where he loved the
still,
idea,
you know,
an opportunity
for others. If you would have had Larry Bird go to Detroit, or if you would have had Michael Jordan go to L.A., or if you would have had James Worthy, you know, go to Seattle, at the end of the game, they want the ball. They want the ball. And LeBron just it doesn't have that in him yet. He just doesn't have that in him yet.
He hits a big shot in Cleveland, where he got criticized a little bit early on. But I mean, in his last few years in Cleveland, he hit some big shots.
What about that free throw he missed?
He missed the free throw. But,
yeah.
he hit some big shots.
I did see that.
That game against Detroit, where it was just like they couldn't do nothing with him.
Well, yeah, I think one thing that is evident, he carried that Cavaliers team because that team is horrible.
Oh yeah,
without him, man.
Well,
so, I mean, I gotta give him credit for that. He was carrying that Cavs team. I mean, that team is awful.
Yeah, and I think he was hoping that by going to Miami, I mean, he saw that Wade was that closer. I think he was okay with being in that role and picking his spots when he had to be that guy. You know,
but that's what I'm saying. Jordan wouldn't have went to L.A. and been happy to play that role. You know,
mm-hmm.
Larry Bird wouldn't have went anywhere and been happy to play that role. You know, that's just not the way they play. You know,
to that point that we made about Jordan, about how Jordan was kind of crazy. Like, he had an element of insanity when it came to winning and competing, and LeBron
right.
don't got that.
That's why he ain't getting
the dunk contest. That's why he ain't getting none of those things. LeBron just don't got that gene, that crazy competitive gene that Jordan has. Well, Jordan will try and outpiss you if y'all standing next to each other in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He gonna make sure he pee longer than you pee.
Yeah.
You know, that's Mike.
In fact, he tried to get that three-point contest, told him he had no boundaries. He was trying to win everything.
Exactly. He did not care. He wanted to whatever piece of hardware he could take home, he wanted to win it. You know, and that was how Mike was wired.
But if you look at the championships that we're used to, you know, and that's, you know, you have to win on some level. You have to,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's, you know, if I'm a GM, When I you know, draft my team, you know, you have to win on some level. And that's why I thought Carmelo Anthony was, you know, as good a pick that year. You know, you have to win on some level. You have to have that feeling. You have to have that desire. And, you know, the one person that I can think of that maybe came out the same way LeBron came out and had that desire was Kobe, you know. And it carried over. You've got to have that desire to win. You've got to have that desire to be the very best. And he sometimes just doesn't seem to have that. He doesn't care. You know, it's not enough to be the best person in the NBA as a fan. As a fan, you could have all the skills you want, but if you don't win championships, you're just a great ball player. Pete Maravich was a great ball player. He won in college, but he didn't win in the pros.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, and it tainted him. You know, it tainted his legacy.
I think that, you know, one of the things that, I don't know if it was you, Ray, or Marcus said this, but, you know, when LeBron, you can tell how people set their goals. So Jordan and some of these guys you're talking about set their goals around winning championships. I mean, when LeBron came in, He wanted to be the first billionaire, you know, athlete. So in that branding piece became a very strong part of who he is. And I think it played an important role in making decisions to go to Miami. But it wasn't just centered around, it was beyond the scope of basketball. Whereas these folks you talk about, Larry Bird didn't have anything psyched of basketball. He did a commercial, the conference commercial, whatever, but it's basketball. You know, even Magic,
right,
who is the ultimate business guy, it was all started and centered around his basketball life, and then he kind of grew from there. Jordan, I mean, all those folks you're talking about started with nothing but the burning desire to be that. And LeBron started with this broader vision, which you admire for a young guy like that, but it wasn't geared about that championship. Not that I'm saying he doesn't desire to do it, but his focus wasn't that narrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bird's focus was very narrow. Jordan's focus was very narrow, even though from that he got this larger brand. But it was always about ended with the basketball. And I don't know if that
may be what has stunted LeBron's growth a bit. You know, it wasn't until these other players got their championships that they got their brand and they got their money. You know, LeBron
mm-hmm.
came in with his money. And,
yep.
and so maybe he's just not as hungry as they were. You know, maybe he doesn't feel the need to put an exclamation point on his career. I mean, I can't believe that he doesn't want to win championships.
I think he wants to win them. I think he wants to win them, and this is something I've said before. You know, you have to think about LeBron as a product of his generation. The Paris Hiltons, the Perez Hiltons, you know, the Kardashians. He's come up in a generation of people who just want to be famous.
That's right.
And what he kind of wants to be is the most famous. And if winning is going to help him become the most famous basketball player ever, then he'll win. If just doing dunks and putting up numbers is going to help him do that, then he'll do it. If going to Miami is going to help him do that, then he'll do it. You know what I mean? He's looking to constantly raise his profile, to constantly be the most famous. Whereas Jordan, Bird, Magic, they wanted to be the greatest. They wanted to win the most championships. They wanted to be the best winner. And I think that's the difference. LeBron is just cut from a different generational cloth than those dudes. Even Kobe. Kobe from jump was obsessed with chasing Mike's ghost and won because he viewed that as the top of the hill, and he wanted to be on that level, and so he chased that and winning and all those things. That's what Kobe was intent on from jump. And I just think LeBron is more a product of this generation of I want to be famous. I want to be, you know, I want to be everywhere, you know. And if winning will help me be everywhere, then I got to win some championships.
Yep. Right. Yep. I think that's a good way of describing that. Right on point. And you know, I always get back to my dog meter. That's why his dog meter is a little bit lower than Kobe's. Because Kobe, he going to shoot every movie in the gun. Think about it. Now, he knows, all the stats tell you, if he shoots more than 20 times, their record is terrible. But at the moment, cost for him to shoot, if he just got to shoot himself into oblivion to try and win, he's going to almost do that. He's going to do whatever it takes. Even if it's self-destructive, that you just, Jordan was that way too. And you don't see that with LeBron is very measured. And that's part of the crazy you talk about. You know, those very competitive, they'll do things that just don't make a lot of sense sometimes because they're clawing even to win that game, even when it looks like the game is out of reach. They still going to try and figure out how to get that victory.
Mm-hmm.
Even when the stats tell them they should be passing more. You know, they just, you know, whatever the moment calls for, they're going to do. And
right.
LeBron,
right, Jordan,
much more
Jordan's shooting percentage was never that great. You know, his shooting percentage was never that great. So, but he was going to shoot. That was his role. That was his, you know, he carried that team. LeBron doesn't want to carry this team yet. But things could change. Things could change. When it gets down to the playoffs and they start looking at embarrassment. You know, one of these guys, either Wade or LeBron, are going to step up.
One of them need to punch Chris Bosh in the nuts. This is shame.
That's the little brother. You know, they brought him along. That's their fault. Chris Bosh is their fault. You know, I'm telling you, you know, they got together and said, "Oh, we'll all make the same money." You know. You know that's got to bother somebody at the end of the year. That's got to, you know, at the end of the year, that's going to piss me off that I was so young and foolish to make that mistake. Because, you know, for what we paid Chris, we could have got a couple more players.
And that's what they're going to be thinking in a minute. Because I'm telling you, having three cats making with $100 million contracts when this new CBA come out, I don't think that's going to be a good look. I don't think that's going to be somebody going to get moved.
No, they're going to throw his ass under the bus, you know. That's what's going to happen.
You know, let them get rolled real quick
this year. Let them get put out of the playoffs this year. And you can bet, you know, in front of the cameras, they're going to say, next year, you know, this trio is going to be tight. But back in Pat's, in Pat's office, they're going to be telling them, you know, you got to get rid of this guy.
Hey, well, the other guy they need to be looking at is Mike Miller. Because he was supposed to give him a lot more than what he's been giving him. I don't know what that's about, but that cat disappeared.
He got hit in the nose today, and they said he might have meet the flight to the next game.
I'm telling you, he's sick.
I'm like, he's glad.
It's real. He got that. He got that Greg Oden. His brother can't stay healthy.
They're looking at him sideways too. It's going. They got Dampier. They got Z. They got Anthony. I don't know, but those three are not just going to be able to do anything with Boston.
Oh, hell no.
No.
If I went into those three with a bar, if I went into a bar with those three, I'd be worried if I was going to come out alive.
I don't know, you know, do you move Miller if you get a couple good games out of him?
Not the way his ass been playing.
I don't think they're going to make any more moves.
This is it.
Right.
Yeah, they are who they are right now, and I think they're a flawed team.
Don't pass around, you might move Bosh. You move Bosh to L.A.
No, that's
L.A. don't want
that
boy.
Somewhere.
He may end up in New York.
They got to do something. Yeah. But the league, the association is bubbling up.
Yeah, so speaking of bubbling, what's up with L.A.? I think they split on the road, on the East Coast swing, or they went 4-2 or on the Grammy trip or whatever. They beat the Celtics, beat the Knicks,
New York,
lost to Orlando and lost to the Bobcats.
See, that's I think what you're seeing out of L.A. is a lot what you saw out of Boston last year. There's no sense of urgency, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
They know they're a good ball team. You know, they know they got a long season, and I was listening to the score today, and that was the issue. You know, what's up with L.A.? And I think they're just tired right now. I think the All-Star break is coming, and you know, if you were at that Bobcat game, you're probably pissed that you know they didn't show up better. But one of the quotes was, Kobe missed the shoot-around. Chills, you know. And the one guy said, well, he thought he was just chilling. Well, no, he had the chills. He was sick. Shit, he wasn't chilling. He didn't just sit. I'm gonna sit this one out, you know. Shooters, they might miss long or short, but Kobe was missing shots in that game left and right by a foot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't feeling well, so. I think that the All-Star break is coming up, and I think that you'll see this L.A. team, you know, come out and do some things.
And they, I think they're trying to measure the success of this trip on those first three games. They went 2-3 in the first three games with Orlando, mm-hmm. New York, Boston. I think winning two of three of those games, but then even though they didn't finish the way they wanted to finish or are going to finish the way they want to finish, I think they're still going to consider this a success because they're able to at least match Boston. They got to New York that next night. And then, you know, Orlando was, I mean, putting those kind of games together and, you know, almost back-to-back, you know, pretty close together, you know, you're going to trip up a little bit there. You hear that, 4 games in 5 nights? I mean, I think that was a little fatigue, like you said. And they got to figure out what to do with our test. I mean, they need, you know, I think getting Barnes back, they got to have somebody on the wing defending. So, you know, getting Barnes back is going to help out a little bit with them. And they got to figure out what they're going to do with our test. You know, is he going to come back?
I think you'll see, you know, I think you'll see L.A. make a move before you certainly see the Heat make a move. You know, they're notorious for it. And
hey, y'all see, I think Ron listens to the show, man. I think Ron Artest listens to the show. Last week we were talking about how we didn't think Ron was crazy.
Yeah.
But this week he decided he was gonna spray that reporter with some cologne just to prove a fucking point. He was like, hey,
I'm still crazy.
Watch this. I'm gonna spray this man with some cologne.
See, that cologne should be a point of contention because that was Lamar and Chloe stuff. That unisex cologne. I'm serious. You know, Lamar handed that stuff out in the locker room, and Artest using it for a weapon. So. If I'm the Lakers, I'm looking at Lamar like he might be a liability. You know, you're just doing a little too much. You know, you got old lady on TV all the time.
You know he's crazy.
Yeah.
He don't need no free samples or nothing but a straight jacket.
Right. You don't give him 3 bottles of anything, you know. That's what he's going to do. Give him 1 bottle and say, look, you know, share it with your friends, you know.
Yeah.
What's
you know, Lamar,
what's going to happen with
him? Go ahead, Jamon.
What's going to happen with Melo?
Oh, man, hell with Carmelo, man. He a bum. I hope he gets stuck. I hope he gets stuck in Denver and wind up going. I hope he has to stay in Denver. He don't get his money. Go to New York for less money. And then Denver, because they've been jerks about trading him, they get stuck with nothing. I hope both parties in the situation lose.
They
both messed it up.
About Felton and they're talking about 3 starters from New York going to Denver. See, Denver's just asking too much.
Yeah.
And like, you gotta give Melo credit. He's still playing. It ain't like he's not playing. Now, if he really wanted to be traded, I don't know.
And see, Melo don't want to get traded. Melo really doesn't. And see, that's what bothers me about this whole situation. Again, cats being motivated by stuff other than winning bothers me sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. In this situation, it bothers me. Because this move is not about going into a better situation where you can win more games. This is about your wife wants to be someplace where she can shop and she can be on TV and she want to be in L.A. or New York and you trying to appease your wife. And I understand it. We all married. We know we all do crazy things for the woman that we love.
But that's a plane.
But you got to draw a line. You got to draw a line.
In the sand, in the snow. I'm with
you. Well,
you
know, I think Denver's doing him wrong. I think, you know, I think he hasn't taken the stance of doing, you know, Denver wrong yet. But it could happen.
Because if I'm New York, man, Denver has asked for so much. If I'm New York, I'm looking at Denver like, y'all is not giving us a savior right now. Y'all roster is better than ours, and y'all ain't won no championships with this dude.
Right.
Yeah, so what makes you think that we put him on our roster, plus we give you three assets, three starters, and now we supposed to be anything more than mediocre? Is y'all crazy?
Exactly. If I'm New York, I'm just saying, I'll wait. I'll keep Feldman, I'll keep my other starter, and I'll just wait. Because at the end of the year, he's leaving one way or the other. So you keep asking for that and see where that gets you. You know,
and that's why I wasn't really buying a Laker talk. I wasn't buying a Laker, and I'm not buying the talk of, like, it's all coming out at a precarious time to me because, you know, the Laker talk popped up where he's talking about buying him for Melo, and I'm like, yeah, that ain't for real. The Lakers ain't going to do that. That's dumb on their part. At the end of the day, I mean, it was all to try and get New York to sweeten the deal, and then Melo talking about, well, I actually might consider staying in Denver. Fool, you ain't staying in Denver. If you was going,
right.
If there was a possibility you was gonna stay in Denver, this whole situation would have played out very differently than what happened. The boy ain't staying in Denver, but that was floated out there. You know, now Denver's trying to put out all these different signals to try and get people to sweeten the deal. Look, y'all losing the dude. If I'm New York, I'm like, look, y'all losing the dude. Y'all
yep.
either take what we offering or y'all shut up.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give you $1 in a jet bag. Let's go.
For real, I wouldn't even give him that much. What was the deal? I give you Wilson Chandler. You can take Corey Brewer from Minnesota. They want to get involved. We do it that way, and that's it. That's what it's going to be, or we'll just wait.
That best deal on the table seemed like it was New Jersey, and they did somebody, you know,
it
somebody
did, yeah.
there. They didn't want to make a move with it. And I still think, in my mind, for Melo, that's a better situation if you get the right one. Plus, I mean, if you just don't. I understand the guard and everything else, but if you want to establish a new legacy and be the franchise's first superstar, you're going to be in the rafters.
Yeah.
Right, right. So in the playoffs, you're going to be forever loved as the guy who brought stuff back to Brooklyn. That's still
yep.
New York.
Yeah, it's still New York.
And you brand with Jay-Z, you brand – I mean, I just think that just – we talked about this. And, I mean, you kind of flowed this at the beginning, Marcus. So I just think – I don't know. Are they afraid of the Russians? Like, you know, if we don't win, they gonna do it like soccer. I don't know. You seem like a cool cat. I mean, folks seem like they're afraid of the Russians. You know, if I come with a hammy, I might end up in the gulag in Siberia. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, man.
Jay-Z, I'm just thinking the Brooklyn, what was I mean? Damn.
But I think
so
with Melo,
Brooklyn
Dodgers more afraid of. I think what Melo is more afraid of is the decision, you know, and making a fool of himself, and putting, you know, too many eggs in one basket, and then having it, you know, end up on his face.
I agree with that, Ray. I think the post decision shock or gun shyness to handle this differently, I think. Melo tried to go the opposite way of the decision in hopes that
right.
it would work out for him. And
I think what he thought is that he would be traded, you know, and then it wouldn't
yeah.
be on him. You know, he'd just be somewhere,
yeah.
and if it didn't work out at the end of the year, nobody would blame him for going somewhere else if he
right.
ended up in a bad situation, you know. Or would
appear to be I don't want people to misconstrue that I'm mad at Carmelo. I just don't think he's worth the hub. I just don't think he's worth the fuss. You know, he won the championship in Syracuse. Since he left Syracuse, he ain't won nothing.
Right, right. But I think what for the free agent market, you know, he is the next talk, and we'll see where it goes. He is going to help a franchise. That you can count on. And I think given the right situation, he could help a franchise go deep into the playoffs. But without, you know, if he just and that's why I don't like New Jersey, because New Jersey isn't nothing but a younger Denver. You know, he's just making a parallel move. He's not really setting himself
up as a
big
New York
league.
Is a parallel move too, though.
Yeah,
and New York is not finna win. New York with Carmelo is still fifth in the East, maybe sixth.
Sure, but if New York keeps those starters. If New York can keep a couple of those starters, if New York doesn't give up the whole team for him, they'll be a better team. And it's still New York, and they'll win more ball games. That's what I see.
But when you're looking at young talent over time, Lopez, I mean, you think about some of those pieces they have in New Jersey over time and got a coach who's demonstrated with the right folks he can get, you know, a team to promised land. I mean, I wouldn't underscore, and I wasn't a big believer, but I think Marcus sold me a little bit more on New Jersey. And I think that the long term, and also if you go with the fame thing, the opportunity to be the first. Is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you flip back, just winning, his best situation to win is stay in Denver. If you think about how the NBA shifted, you think about the aging process of some of those teams in the West, you think about what Denver's done in recent years in terms of challenging some of those teams in those through those
sure.
rounds. I mean, if you really made the argument about he's probably in his best. If he would just focus on winning this year with the team he has right there, they could make a run. They could make a run. And no one's thinking about that.
Well, I mean, I think that Denver as a team and Melo as a player have put themselves in that position. You know, they're not thinking about a run this year. You know, they're not thinking about, you know, they're thinking about how they can, you know, break up without, you know, having to split the baby. And it's just not going to happen.
I mean, you've got a Fowles picked up his game. You got some other pieces. And you got some folks there who are picking up a game and your team is maturing. And you're talking about
this. That's why I don't. That's why. That's the thing that, like, that's why. That's what bothers me about the situation from Melo's perspective. Again, I ain't mad at Melo because I think he tried to handle this the best way he could by being upfront with the team, by saying I'm not going to sign an extension, and by being adamant and staying true to that, and not kind of being like, well, I'll weigh my options at the end of the season, yada yada yada. He's like, nah, I'm not staying here, and there's only a couple teams I want to go to, and one of them's New York, and that's where I would like to be. So if you can make that happen, make that happen. If you can't make that happen, I'll go there in the summer.
And everybody talks about the decision, but if you think about what Cleveland tried to put around LeBron and what Denver's put around Melo, think about you got lost. Think about Denver's put some pieces around Melo.
If you swapped out Melo in Denver, they probably still break about 500. If you took Melo out of Denver, they probably still break about 500. They wouldn't
right.
be
right.
amazing. They
would
probably
be
like the Grizzlies, where they'd be around 500, maybe compete for a seed.
Yep.
If you you took LeBron off that Cavs team, and you see how that fell apart.
Right.
Because,
yep.
I mean, Nene's a good – Nene, you know, given the year, is a borderline all-star.
That's right.
You know, he's a borderline all-star. Chauncey's been there before. Chauncey can play. You know, J.R. Smith, you know, when his head is on right, he can play.
Mad Max. That's Mad Max 2.0.
Yeah. What's the face? Kenyon Martin. You know, he's probably the last enforcer in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could help. That's the type of cat that the Heat need. If I was the Heat, I'd just swap Bosh and Kenyon Martin straight up, even with the bad knees. I just need that attitude.
Yep.
You know, you give me a cat that's a forearm shiver somebody when they come through the lane, I'll take that. You know?
And got some lips staring at you off his neck.
Right. You know, give me the cat with the 7 neck tats. You can tell the show is degenerating when we get to talk about the Denver Nuggets neck tats.
All neck teams. They got
three
in the starting five. Oh, my. Three. They got three in the starting five.
Tell you, man. That locker room, man. That locker room got all types of iodine poisoning.
Is that what they're doing, Denver? I love that some Portland type stuff. That's what they're doing, Denver. I'm trying to think about. What makes you just know you're not going to do any other job, no marketing, after you leave Hoop after that? Or you you wear nothing but turtlenecks.
Yeah. Well, hell, Birdman, Chris Anderson, man, look like he got on a tattoo turtleneck. I mean, the only thing that's not tatted up is, like, the exact front of his face. I mean, like, he just left the front of his face alone. He's like, everything else is got something on it.
See, and I don't, you know, and that's funny because I ain't never walked into a tattoo parlor. You know, I never even walked into one. I'm just looking, you know, I'm just looking. Don't really want nothing, I'm just looking. ain't never walked in. I ain't never got up the nerve to get something on me.
Yeah.
And these young
that ain't how I roll. I don't get down like that. Anybody that know me know I don't like needles to begin with. I don't like the idea of getting stuck with nothing.
Oh, fuck.
So, you know, I ain't no tattoo. That ain't my ball game, man. I don't do the tattoos. And they expensive anyway.
I don't know.
They expensive anyway. But, yeah. So, we got the All-Star game coming up this weekend. And this is something I'm going to put out there. I think this would be great for some interesting debate. And this is an idea that, you know, with every year that the All-Star game comes around, we talk about how the dunk contest has lost its luster and what they need to do differently for the dunk contest or what they could do differently with the dunk contest. And an idea that I've discussed with people several times and talked with people about, and I think, you know, on our Facebook page, maybe we can get the fans and get our listeners involved and have some, it'll make for some real interesting debate. Is we do a 16-man one-on-one tournament is what I think the NBA should do. They should have a one-on-one 16-guy tournament over All-Star Weekend instead of the dunk contest. And you take the 16 top players in the league and have them play one-on-one. And the winner is the best baller in the league.
They used to do that.
You can't tell me Kobe wouldn't enter that. You can't tell me. I don't know if LeBron would enter it because he's LeBron. But I know a cat like Kobe, a cat like Kevin Durant, cats who are Paul Pierce, you know, those guys are going to want Rondo, Derrick Rose, Deron Williams, CP3. Those guys are going to want to enter that and play against each other to show everybody that they are. Like, you get a matchup with Deron Williams against Chris Paul to actually see in a one-on-one who is the best point guard in the game. And just to see them cats go one-on-one and to see what they do in open court and open space, I think I would pay pay per view to watch that. A 16 cat tournament where they playing one on one bracket style.
You know, 15
you got your
by one
seed versus your 16. Yep,
yeah,
15 by one.
Take it up to three. Shit, go straight up old school with them.
Right. Yeah, I like to see Dirk in that. You know.
Yeah.
How are he faring in some like Ginobili?
Yeah.
So I'm going to come up with a list of the top 16 guys, and we could figure that out. You know, we could figure that out right now, or we could figure that out later time. But I'm going to throw that out on Facebook and see if we can, you know, match up for match up and get some debate going as to who will win and get some people casting votes. And we'll see how the tournament plays out as we get further, you know, further in. See who advances and who the people out there would think will advance and continue to go on. Because I think it's a great idea. And I think the NBA should do it. And get a nice little trophy and maybe put up a $50,000 to the winner, you know, and $50,000 to a charity. You know what I'm saying? Each guy's playing for a charity. Each guy picks a charity that they're playing for. He's got an NSPC charity to play for. They get $50,000, the charity get $50,000.
But I can remember when I was a kid, they had some one-on-ones. I can remember Jabbar and Julius Erving playing. You know?
Yeah, see,
I can remember. It was like on Saturdays in the summertime, like on ABC Wild World of Sports or something.
Yeah,
and they had. I don't know if they you know, every weekend they would have a different matchup. But it was
that's a
great idea.
I would pay per view that. I would dial that up. I would call up Dish, DirecTV, Charter, Comcast, whoever you got. I would call them up, and I'd pay for that. I'd pay for a 16-man tournament. Dunk contest I still enjoy, but the dunk contest is hit or miss, depending upon who you get in. You know, I think every year you get the 16 best players in the league in this. You know. And maybe you get that guy who's 17 or 18 who ain't supposed to be in it. But because he ain't supposed to be in it, he got a big-ass chip on his shoulder. So, you know, he plays his guts out. You know, that's what I like to see play. So we're going to play that out on our Facebook page because I want to see what the people out there think, how they view
that particular scenario playing out, because it's an interesting fantasy of mine, a dream of mine to see something like that happen. And like I said, I think it would be a hell of a moneymaker, man.
I think that would be a good way to kind of play it out. Yeah, people will go at it. You imagine in the finals, Kobe against LeBron.
Exactly. Or LeBron against Durant.
Yep.
You know. Yeah, I think it would be. It would definitely lead to some nice barbershop conversations.
Yep.
You know. And I'm sure it would be a ton of did you see that moments. Like, did you see when LeBron crossed over Kobe and, you know, left Kobe, you know, reaching for air or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it would also surprise people, like, oh, I didn't know, you know, so-and-so could handle the ball that well. I didn't know so-and-so had a post-up game, you know. Well, I didn't know so-and-so could shoot it off the dribble like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you could see some different dimensions of players' games that you may not get to see in the context of what they do with their team.
Yep.
You know, because you know, we were talking earlier about Paul Pierce. You know, a lot of guys got some stuff in their game that they don't get to use,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the way they're utilized by their teams. So, yeah. Like I said, I think
Paul
Pierce would
be ideal in a one-on-one game. I mean, Paul
Pierce. Oh, yeah. I was telling Devon earlier, he's a Pierce, man.
I might put my money on some Pierce.
People don't appreciate Paul's game because he's not super athletic. You know, he's not a vertical guy. But Paul's game is so sweet, man. Like I said, he can play.
He'd back you down and shoot them fadeaway jump shots and just laugh at you.
Off the wrong foot?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's so crafty. He's got so many moves. His spin moves. Dude's got game. Dude's got game coming out of his ears, man. So what I want to do now is just but be on the lookout for that. Listeners out there, be on the lookout. And if you are listening, call in and give us 50. Help us pick this 16-man lineup, you know, because we want to get a good idea of who we want. We want to make sure we got the right guys in there to create some nice matchups. So if you got some suggestions, feel free to call at any time, 1-347-989-0844. What I want to do now is transition into talking about the NFL labor talks, man. And things are getting a little shaky. You know, owners walking away from the table, trying to get the law involved. Anytime the law gets involved with labor talks, it's a problem.
It'll be a long one.
Once you start going to court, then you in court. And court take a long ass time. I don't care what you're there for.
I think the owners are doing everything they can to keep from opening up those books. And that's, you know, I think the players are right in demanding that, you know. The owners want a third party, you know, somebody that they both can agree on to open up the books and report. And you have to wonder why that is so taboo. You have to wonder if the owners don't want the other owners to know what their books look like. You know,
that's an interesting perspective. I haven't thought about it looking at it that way.
You know, Jerry Jones doesn't want, you know, the owner at the Panthers to know how he generates revenue. You know, if this is supposed to be revenue sharing and blah, 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 I think the owners are real concerned about all the stuff coming out. Otherwise, if the owners really need, because they're asking for $1 billion. It ain't like they want $1.95. They want $1 billion. But they don't want to show you why. You know? And if I'm the players, I'm like, well, wait a minute. If you really need it, we can see it. If you just show it to us, we'll see it. And they're like, oh, we can't show you. What do you mean you can't show me? Oh, we ain't opening the books. We'll open it up to somebody we agree with. Or we can agree on somebody, but I'm not showing you. I'm going to show a third party. Well, again, you ain't asking for $1.95. You want $1 billion. What are you going to How are you going to ask for $1 billion, but you don't want to show me the books? You're telling me about all these hardships, but you don't want to show them to me. You just want to tell me you. I got some hardships, too. But I didn't show it to you. $1 billion? So that they can grow the league. The players should be saying, well, we're just fine with it the way we are. You know?
They don't need to get no bigger than this.
No, we don't need 18 games. Yeah, we don't need a team overseas.
Yeah, they ain't even talking about that no more. The owners ain't even brought that up no more. I think the players went in and was like, nah, that ain't happening. Look, 18 games, y'all going to have to come up off money. And if y'all trying to take money, y'all not going to get 18 games and take money from us. Okay? Y'all got to pick one or the other, either the money or the games. Because if we play 18 games, we're going to get some more money.
Well, I really think that, you know, Jerry Jones doesn't want to open his books. You know, I don't think, you know, I don't, because to be honest with you, some of these teams are making tremendous amounts of money. And then you have teams that like the Packers, like the Steelers, these small market teams that are doing it. In places and in ways that the Jerry Joneses and the L. Davises are not doing it. They don't want to open the books. And, you know, it ain't like they've been driving Pintos for the last 3 years. They can't be in that kind of hardship to just ask for, you know, we got to have $1 billion. That's a lot of money. The league is generating
$7 billion. Jerry, nobody told you to build that monstrosity. Nobody told you to build that. You know, what's going to come down to, and we're seeing this in the state of Wisconsin, there's this movement across America, and I knew this was coming, but you're going to see it in sports, in which, and this is what these guys are doing, it's going to be in this, you know, a lot of reports is led by, was I think, Richards out of Carolina, owner, former football player. As they said, he's the only former football player who's an owner, is, they're being aggressive, and they're going to break. See, part of it, this is where, you know, Larry Holmes used to say, you know, it's hard to get up and work out when you're wearing silk pajamas. You know what I'm saying? And what they're counting on is breaking the union because players are used to a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to come down to whether the owners have done all the work they need to do to think about how they might survive a lockout that might go through a season. Because if they really want to crush the union, if they're able to hold out to this time next year and feel like they can still come back a few years later, they'll get everything they need.
But the first time
they come and get their car and their wife look at you sideways, you come back knocking on the door. And I think if this thing goes into June, that's what's going to happen.
But the owners, you know, it's funny that the owners are litigating against the players because the owners have set themselves up for a lockout. The owners have negotiated contracts to be paid by the television companies even if they don't play games.
Right.
The owners hired the attorney that was so successful in the NHL lockout. And now they're talking about the players not wanting to negotiate in good faith. You know, they're asking for $1 billion, but they're not opening the books. The owners have walked away from the table. I mean, it's just, and again, like you said, like in Wisconsin, you know, Scott Walker is a perfect example of why a man who works 9 to 5 should never pull. And it's the same thing with the NFL. These guys, they want to be the boss. They want to show you who the boss is. They want to tell you who's running the show. They're never going to put a pad on. And the thing of it is, these are the same owners who have strong-armed communities to build the stadiums,
mm-hmm.
have had states tax their taxpayers to build stadiums. And Green Bay is the perfect example of how you don't really even need an owner. You don't even need them.
Right.
They have a monopoly. They have a monopoly. This is the only game in town like this. It's, you know, you can't talk about Canadian football. You can't talk about NFL Europe. This is the NFL, and there's only one of them. And you have these. You have 31 billionaires, or near it, owning these teams, and they don't want to play. They just want to. They want to control everything.
And
they want to tell
I posted on my Facebook page a couple of weeks ago about how, like, the current structure of NFL is very socialist. Bill Maher had a,
sure.
wrote an article about how it's socialism and how the country hates that word, but they love it because it allows the Green Bay Packers to compete with the Cowboys every year.
That's right.
It allows the Buffalo Bills to go to 4 Super Bowls.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? It allows the Steelers to be able to get to 7 Super Bowls, however many Super Bowls they've been to. That's the system that's in place in the NFL. And
sure.
and where and I think what the owners want to go to is what the Republicans want to see, which is
that's right.
you get what you earn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand how if you call yourself a Green Bay Packers fan, how you could be in favor of any system like that, because the Packers will immediately sink. Within the next 10 years, they would sink to the bottom of the league if it was solely
that's
based
right.
on the smallest city in the league, period. They're not even the biggest city in their own state. You know, they're like third or fourth largest city in the state of Wisconsin, which is not fraught with big cities.
But the Green Bay Packers are an example of what the whole NFL could look like if you broke this monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people in L.A., they deserve a football team. But the NFL is not letting them have, you know, you got to go through procedures with the NFL to have a football team. You can't just put together, you know, a group of businessmen and say, I have a stadium, I'm ready to draft a team. They show up at the NFL and say, look, we want to do this too. They don't let you do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't tell, you know, it's like if Kia decides they want to open up a factory in Detroit, Detroit has to let them do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the American way. You know, if Volvo decides they want to go to Dearborn and build a factory, Dearborn would have to open them up because that's the American way. That's business. But in the NFL, if you want to have a franchise, you got to go to the NFL and get permission. You have to
mm-hmm.
buy into this. You have to play their game.
You got to know the secret code of the $1 billion boys club.
That's right. You know, and what you're seeing in the NFL, like the dude from the Panthers, they were 2-14 this year. They were 2-14. No.
What you want to tell them, Ray? Check your ass up. Get your team better before you come in here talking crazy.
You're 2-14, and you want what more money do you need to put together a team like the Steelers? What more money do you need? Where are you gonna put the money? You have the same opportunities as the Steelers. What are the Steelers doing so much better than you? That you're 2-14 and they played in the Super Bowl. They're a small market team. You know, what are you going to do with that $1 billion? How are you going to make this league grow and you do better than 2-14?
Go ahead, D.
And that's why, and I'm not going to take it too far off this. That's why when he was getting crazy with Peyton and Drew Brees, they should have just come back at him like this. You need to stop talking to me.
Sure.
You need to figure out how to win some games.
You know, he tells Peyton Manning, what do you know about safety? You know, I'd be like, what do you know about football? You didn't make no money in football. You made money in restaurants.
I'll say, man, like, how many games did y'all win this year?
Right.
What you know about winning?
I like the Wonder to bring Steve Smith and put him in the negotiation. Sit across from your owner and have your owner talk to you like that. But Steve Smith would reach across and slap his old ass. He slapped a lot of people before. Shit. Look him in the eye and talk that. Because Steve Smith is, he puts me in the
You have a case of Sprewell, Steve Smith type reaction to it.
Right.
That's okay. He's lucky he said that to Peyton Manning, because.
Right.
Again, he said that to Steve Smith and one of them, or somebody. He'd have caught one.
Yeah, Steve Smith would have been like,
what
you know about
something
safety?
Else going on.
Yeah. What do you know about safety? Can somebody help me pick them teeth up?
I know it's not safe to pay for Carolina.
Right. That's right.
One thing I know about safety.
But again, you know, this is the NFL, and the NFL, and we talked about this months ago. The NFL is on the verge of spoiling the best game in professional sports. The NFL, the owners, are hell bent on creating a Walmart situation where they've already driven out all the competition. There'll never be anything to compete with the NFL. And it's not enough. It's not enough for them. They have an opportunity to play under the same rules and guides that the Packers and the Steelers have to play under, and it's just not enough. You know, Jerry Jones builds, you know, what may be the next Roman Coliseum, and he wants $1 billion. You know, 32 teams dividing up $1 billion. What for? What for?
Hey, I'll tell you what, man. Jerry Jones is going to do whatever it takes to get that money, man. Telling them people that they had
right.
seats that wasn't made. Selling seats that don't exist.
It's good old
Quick paper can't do that,
good old,
man.
Like, oh, that's our fault. Our fault. That's our fault. Jerry, shit, Jerry would have stacked him up in the parking lot if he could.
Seriously, he'd have had them selling the concessions. Y'all at the game, I don't know what y'all complaining about.
and I would like, we'll give some money back, but we got minimum 3-year guaranteed contracts.
Yep.
Yeah, if I'm the player, that's what I'm like. At the end of the day, the owners is the one who's asking for money.
All right.
I'm sorry.
The owners are
you.
The owners want
you rich.
They want,
how's you asking me for money?
The owners would like to see a 5-year rookie contract. 5 years. With guidelines, with a minimum contract, and
that's crazy because this ain't basketball.
No.
That works for the NBA. Like you could have a 3-year where the top pick is gonna make $5 million no matter what. Every year the top pick makes $5 million.
No.
That works in basketball. That don't work in football, especially if you're talking about increasing games and shortening careers.
No.
I need to get my money when I can.
Right.
You know, maybe they percentage it out where, you know, the top pick at a specific position gets to make a certain amount given to the relative top paid player. You know, if the top pick this year is the Fairley kid from Auburn, well, he can make his 50% of the highest paid defensive tackle in the league.
But that's exactly
so
it.
That's the cap.
Look at the collusion that has already taken place. These rookie contracts where last year's first pick only made a percentage more than the year before's first pick. You could get drafted this year if you were under the same contract, and realize you're probably only get 3 to 5% more than the guy did last year. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And also remember that these are contracts that the owners negotiated. They started this. This is their doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is where This is where they're at.
I'm not trying to. I'm saying I'm not agreeing on anything that's going to legislate your behavior. You business people, you became billionaires for a reason.
Right.
Make the right decisions. And so quit asking me to put things in to protect yourself and your colleagues. No.
I'm not trying to protect you from you.
That's right.
And they're trying to say that it's not the salary
to go to
that
owners
they're concerned with. It's the other monies that they're spending. You know, that the cost of doing business has gone up. $1 billion? Then open the books. Open the books. If you open the books,
Goodell's excuse was, they tried to open the books in other leagues, and it doesn't lead to an agreement. Open the books has never really led to an agreement. Well, let's set precedent.
Right. We the NFL. That's what we do.
For $1 billion, we okay with the current agreement.
Well, the other, owners don't want other owners to see their books, or there are owners that will be heading straight to the penitentiary when these books are opened up. Because the IRS will be like, well, we didn't know you did that. You know,
That's an interesting take on it, Ray, because like I said when you said that the first time, I hadn't even really thought about it like that. About it from the fact that they didn't want the players to know how much of a deficit they really were working with.
If the fans in Carolina had to sit through a 2-14 season, and they opened up the books and they found out that the cat in Carolina made more money than Rooney, wouldn't you be pissed off? wouldn't you be pissed off? As a fan of Carolina, you made more money than Rooney. I'm following your ass. I got this blue jersey. I'm following you around. I paid for these season tickets. And that's the other thing. You go from city to city and realize that there's a disparity in the ticket prices. And you know that some teams are making more money than others. There's only so much revenue sharing. Jerry Jones still has positioned himself to be the richest NFL owner simply by building the greatest stadium in the NFL. The fella in Indianapolis has positioned himself to be the richest owner or one of the richest owners in the NFL simply by building a stadium that he did. There's only so much revenue sharing. But when you open the books and realize that these guys aren't losing money, like I say, it ain't like they drove Pintos for the last 3 years. It's not like they're, you can't see hardship. You know, they ain't got holes in their shoes. All of a sudden, they just ain't making it. These cats are making it.
I've been eating Pinto beans for the last 3 weeks. I need that
right.
billion
it,
from
it
the
like,
players.
It ain't Monday beans and rice. It ain't Monday beans and rice. You know, you have roast beef on Sunday, but on Monday you have beans and rice. No, it ain't happening in the NFL. Not in the owners. They're making money. They are all making money.
And the other group, I think, if we follow your line of thinking, the other people, they don't really want to know how they're making is these municipalities. Especially some of these folks have stadium deals in which they got taxpayers paid, and then they realize how much some of these folks made in which they could have financed some of these stadiums. So I think that's the other group.
You think the
stadium deals and things like that, that comes back to haunt you. You can always come back to this and say, you know, you've made enough money to finance a stadium. Why are you asking us for it?
That's right. But that's exactly
why.
This
is the most intelligent conversation I've heard around this topic. And I think, you know, the major networks ain't going in on these cats because they in cahoots with them. You know, they work with the owners. They work with the league.
You know, Fox may have the NFL, you know, the NFC, you know. So they're not going to talk about these topics. They're not going to push that button. But the truth of the matter is that the NFL owners, if they are only, because they're telling you that the players are only getting half of the revenue. Think about it. If your stadium is owned by the municipality.
After the first billion. So they already give him the first billion up, and then they do the split, right? So they already give him a billion, and then they do the split. So if you need $10 billion, they get a billion, then y'all doing the split 60-40, whatever it is, on nine. But you already get the first billion up front. So you're not even, it ain't even, you know, it's more than that if the owners are getting.
That's right. So, I mean, these, you know, it would certainly halt some stadiums being built. It would certainly halt, you know, it would halt those winter meetings. You know, if I got to show up, you know, if I got to show up and rub elbows with a cat that's making so much more. But, you know, they're saying they need that $1 billion to improve the league. You got to improve the 2-14. You improve the 2-14. If every team in the league went 500, it would improve the league. The competition would be there. Everything would be fine. But you've got some teams that are not doing it. You've got some teams that are not doing it. They're asking for money to improve what? You fill, you know, you filled your coffers with money with a 2-14 team, and you don't want to open your books? You gonna tell me you got hardships? How much hardship can you have?
Hard out there on a pimp. Do y'all think that the union can stay along together, strong enough to do this?
I mean, cause I don't know.
Baseball. They haven't been like baseball historically. Football has been, because of the fact that they don't have longevity, they've had stars cross and do that. So, I mean, how do y'all feel about, does it feel like the union's going to stay together?
See, this is where I don't think they're gonna stay together. Because as you were saying before, when them cars start getting repoed, and you know they got to move to a smaller crib, and you know all that stuff starts to go down, cats living beyond their means got to get that money.
Yeah. That's gonna be the killer right there.
But baseball is going to see that now. You know, that Albert Pujols contract, that's going to be, you know, these teams Marcus, you okay?
I'm good, man. My dog is barking at something, his own reflection.
You better make sure, because it might be somebody with a brick.
I think it's one of the NFL owners. They be exposing them. NFL owners keep it around my house. Yeah, stop this radio
that's
show.
That's what I'd love to see. That's what I'd love to see legislated right there. You know, I would love to see this go to court, and I would love to see somebody say, "Look, you got this monopoly. You know, you've got the only show in town. Let's open the books and see what it really looks like. Let's see what it really looks like." Because if the city of Green Bay can own a football team, renovate a 75-year-old stadium, win a world championship, you don't have to have one guy making this big chunk of loot. You don't have to have this one guy asking for, you know, they could run these things, you know, the NFL would look just, you know, would look just fine if you didn't have any owners at all.
I can't argue with that. I really can't, because it works. There's a model that says that works.
You know, and if you're going to ask these municipalities if you're going to ask municipalities to build these stadiums, they should be the ones. You know, I could see if Detroit said, "Look, we need $1 billion. You know, we got some renovations we got to do. The city doesn't have it. We need $1 billion, another billion off the top." But I'm not buying it from Jerry Jones. I'm not buying it. You know, open the books up. Let's take a look.
Yeah, and, you know, DeMar Smith has his hands full, and we're going to see what's going to happen. I mean, he's still got a little bit of time here before it's officially closed down. You know, maybe this is smokescreen for getting the deal done, but we'll see.
Yeah, speaking of deadlines and getting deals done, I want to get you guys weigh in on this whole Pujols deal. You know, you got a small market team in the St. Louis Cardinals who, for a small market, they do well. They compete on a yearly basis, and they've done so with a certain business model, which usually doesn't involve shelling out a whole bunch of dough to one particular guy on the roster. So, you know, for them to be able to keep Pujols, they're going to have to do that. And you got the best player in the game. You got to keep him. And the only way to keep him is to pay him. But they don't know if they can afford to pay him. And they've been planning for this moment. I mean, it's not like he just became the best player in the game last year. They've been trying to save up for this moment for a while. And now this moment is here. And he's giving them a deadline till Wednesday, till tomorrow, to come up with a deal, a contract, or else he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. What do you guys think of this whole situation?
Here's what I would do with Albert Pujols. And Albert Pujols is the best player in baseball right now. But he's 31 years old. And you're not going to say that in 6 years. And he wants a 10-year contract. And his 10-year contract, he wants more money than A-Rod. And you can already see where I'm going here. A-Rod, when he signed that contract, it seemed to make a lot of sense. You know, when Soriano went to the Cubs, it seemed to make a lot of sense to pay the guy that kind of money because at the time, he was that kind of a player. But time is not on Albert Pujols' side. You know, the last 10 years, this cat has hit 30 home runs. You know, he has over 100 RBIs, and he scored over 100 runs over the last 10 years. That makes him really the best player in baseball. Nobody is able to play like that. But the next 10 years aren't going to be like that. The next 10 years can't be like that. Age is going to catch up with his ass. And so you have to decide how you're going to keep him. And if I'm the Cardinals, I'm going after Albert like, look, I'll give you $30 million a year, but you're going to have to hit 30 home runs, and you're going to have to hit 100 RBIs, and you're going to have to score 100 runs. And if you do that, I'm going to give you $30 million a year, but I'm only going to guarantee 15. Because if you don't do that, I don't know why I'm going to pay you like that.
Right. And that's the conundrum they're in because, you know, this is a guy who if he was 26, they would just give him the contract. It would be no big deal. But given his age and, you know, if you look at his production has tailed off a bit in the last couple of years. You know, we're going to have to see.
But I can't give you a $300 million contract. Oh, but I love you.
Right.
I want you to stay, but I can't give you $300 million. If you look at where the Cubs, you know how much money the Cubs got tied up in Soriano and what's the pitcher, Zambrano? They
yeah.
have him strung for years. If they could, they'd move him. They would move him and pay some of that if they could, but they can't. So now they got these two old-ass players that are never going to play up to that contract. Even if they cut him, they got to pay him. Albert, I can't give you $300 million. I just can't give you that kind of money. I'll give you $150 million and give you an incentive clause to make 30 a year. And if you hit 30 home runs, you give me 100 RBIs, you score 100 runs, you get your 30. If you do what you do the next 10 years like you did the last 10 years, you'll get $300 million. But if you don't, I'm not hamstrung paying your old ass.
Yeah.
I'm not hamstrung trying to win these championships. And $150 million guaranteed, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of coconuts.
Ray, I might even sweeten the pot. You know, I might have a sentence up there that might make you well over $300 million if you perform at that level.
Sure.
You know, it might say, you know, it could be upwards of $350 million.
you know, in certain scenarios. If we win a Super, if we win a World Series in that time,
right.
Well, we could put some incentives in there that might take it well over, you know, $300 million, you know, in terms of that. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a good approach. The problem is, you know, how agents and everybody else, they want that guaranteed money. And this is because
that's what the agent gets paid for. You know, he only gets 10% of the guaranteed money. He gets 10% of what was promised in the contract. He'll get 10% of the incentives.
That's right.
But that's, you know, that's still $15 million. I know the agents gonna try to go for more, and there'll be teams that will fight for Albert Pujols. That's the problem. The Cardinals know that they're without a $300 million contract, he's gone. Because somebody will pay him that next year. And so I would just tell Albert, you know, pick a team. Because by the All-Star break, if we're not winning, I'm sending your ass somewhere. I'm getting a couple little cards, you know.
Well, let's see what he's done. He blocked him because he said he's not going to take any trades. So he's basically controlling this whole thing.
Yeah, so basically what he's told them is that you either sign me or I become a free agent. You can't. He told them they can't trade him.
He really got
them by the balls.
Well, see, that in there again, as much as we just talked about the NFL and trying to, you know, take some of that leverage away from the owners, this is just a situation. If I'm owning the Cardinals, I'm telling my fans, this is what we can do. Because 10 years from now, when I'm paying Albert's ass that last $30 million and he's only hitting 15 home runs, you know, and he's only playing every third day, you're going to be mad.
There ain't no DH in the National League.
That's right.
You know, you can't DH a cat out in the National League.
Right.
But I just can't tie that kind of money up into it. I just can't. And I would be going to my fans and saying, look, you don't think New York feels bad about what they got tied up in A-Rod right now? You don't think the Cubs feel bad about what they got tied up in Soriano right now or Zambrano? Do you want to be like that? Do you want your team to be like that? You know, you're going to hate me if Albert leaves, but don't hate me so much. Understand this is where we're at. That's why I like the way that the Brewers wrapped some talent around Fielder this year. They may very well and probably will lose Fielder this year. But the Brewers said, look, let's try to win one. Let's just try to win one this year. And if Prince wants to go, he's more than welcome to go. Because our fans know we can't pay his big ass. You know, we ain't selling enough bratwurst to keep Prince. So let's just try to win one, because I can't tie up that much money in one player. So let's tie up that much money in a half dozen players for the last year that we have his ass, try to win something. And maybe we'll hook a young cat in a couple years and come right back and try to do it again. But these small market teams that try to keep these players that get hamstrung, it's ridiculous. I wouldn't even try to do it. I would tell my fans, if we were in Boston, we'd be doing it, but we ain't in Boston.
And St. Louis, I mean, with the ownership, everything, they got deep pockets. But I think a lot of stuff you're talking about, this is like knowing when you know how to make a transition. This is kind of a weird thing because he's kind of still in his prime of hitting, but he's nearing that point where he's going to start going down the other way. And so this is a real – he's at a real interesting point. You know, usually these cats are kind of a little bit younger, and you can see yourself making the investment, or they're a little bit older, and it's kind of clear, we can't go that way. But he's in such a sweet spot, you know. So when they're trying to get that six-year deal on the table or something like that, you know, that's about right. I'll give you $30 million a year for 6 years. So by the time I pay you that last contract, you are kind of weighing off at the end, but we're in a position to regroup. And then if you got to go and finish out your last 3 or 4 years somewhere else, we've done all we can do. And everybody's going to respect that. But he tried to go for those three more, four years on top of that. And, you know,
You know, if you know that Chicago's going to give you 8 or 9 years, can't you give us a 7-year home discount?
He don't believe in that home discount. Alvin ain't playing that. He playing hardball for real.
Well, I mean, do you believe La Russa when he says that the player union is pushing him to do that? Kind of like what they did with A-Rod, when A-Rod was going to look to take a little bit less money to go to Boston. You know, and then the player union stepped in, and A-Rod was still kind of upset about that because that's where he wanted to go, and they told him he couldn't, you know, they advised, they didn't tell him he couldn't do the deal, but they strongly advised against him taking that deal. So, I mean, could the player union...
But at the end of the day, Eldred and A-Rod have to sign their own contracts. You know, if you look at what Oswald did this year, you know, or not Oswald, yeah, Oswald, or Cliff Lee. When Cliff Lee went back to Philly, he took less money.
Yeah.
You know, he put himself in a position. He's sitting with the best bullpen or the best starting rotation in the league. You know, that team is, you know, that team is destined. He took less money to play there. You know, so the union is only, you know, if you want to fault them for advising, but you know, A-Rod is what they want is for A-Rod, or for Pujols to sign that, because once a $300 million contract is out there, a 310 is just around the corner.
You think it's a 310? The 310 is not far behind.
That's right. You know, and then all of a sudden you're talking 350. You know, it's been 400. I think that if Albert Pujols were 24. 27 maybe I would
say it's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
but it's a no-brainer.
At 31 and you want a 10-year contract, I can't give you that, Albert. You
and
know,
we tested
no
for
more.
Roids.
You
it,
know,
it ain't the steroid era, man.
Yeah.
That's what somebody needs to let
they
Albert know. It's not the steroid era no more. Like, I don't think cats is going to be playing that well into their 40s anymore.
I know. It ain't something you can do with just one of them natural shakes that Tony Gonzalez is selling. You just
like I say, I just if I'm the owner down in St. Louis, I'm just telling my fans, I can't do that to you. And as much as we're going to hate to lose him, I can't do that to you, because in 10 years, Albert Pujols is not going to be a $30 million player.
Yeah.
It's just I can't do that to you. In 5 years, he'd still be a $30 million player, but not in 10. And in 10 years from now, we'll be a terrible baseball team because I can't pay anybody else.
Yeah,
these contracts can't keep going up. These contracts can't keep going up like this.
And if you were in the American League, you might be able to look at that. We could probably do 8 or 9 because the last 3 years you're going to be DHing.
Right.
And Albert Pujols for the DH, I could still work with. I believe you might still be a good DH.
Sure.
You got to worry about playing.
It ain't like Matt Holliday where, you know, you expect some defense and you might. I ain't seeing it, you know. And again, I can't deny that he's not the best baseball player, you know, right now. Albert Pujols, you know, is the best baseball player in the game today. He just ain't going to be the best player in 10 years. 10 years from now, and there'll be contracts bigger than Albert's by then. But, I just wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. And I would call a news conference. I would take a full-page ad. And I think that's what Milwaukee's going to have to do. You know, I think Milwaukee thought if they can win, you know, maybe they can get Prince for a little bit less than what they're afraid they're going to have to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're hoping that, you know, let him win. Well, let him even get close to winning. Let him taste it. And then he wouldn't go to some other team unless they truly could win a championship.
Right. I mean, that's your best offer. I mean, that's your best bet. You know, that's your best marketing campaign right there is winning. Because there isn't much else that's going to keep him attached to Milwaukee other than you know, making a run.
But I, you know, you're gonna, like I say, if the union would like to see it, it's only because they want that $310 million contract. Everything goes up from there.
And, I mean, and every once in a while, you got somebody who can reset the salary scale. And I think Lee's a great player, but, you know, he's not the kind of guy who's going to really reset the salary scale.
No, not at all. Albert's the one. You know, it was A-Rod before him. But, again,
A-Rod.
I bet you there's some folks – there's some folks at the Yankees looking at A-Rod like, damn, we shouldn't be paying you that kind of money. A-Rod won't even be – the best third baseman in baseball next year, you know. But he's going to be one of the top five players paid, you know. So he's not going to be a top five player next year. He's probably not going to be the top third baseman. And yet they're going to pay him like he is.
I mean, he ain't even going to play on the Yankees no more.
No.
I can know better.
Oh yeah, just went to Sheriff. That's part of it. And can you reload? I mean, this is going to be these are again two sides lining up. You're going to see what the outcome is going to be. And La Russa in the middle, co-signing.
Well, La Russa, I think La Russa is trying to take a little pressure, you know, off of Pujols, because otherwise Pujols comes off as a very greedy individual.
You know, hell yeah.
He appointed at the union. It ain't Albert, it's the union. Because he knows he's got to go out there and set that lineup. And, you know, if they don't get this done, don't think them folks in St. Louis ain't going to be booing his ass.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they got it.
St. Louis got some of the smartest baseball fans out there, man.
That's right.
I mean, they baseball fans, like, people up here is Packer fans, they get down for the Cardinals like that, and they know what they're talking about. They know their stuff. They're knowledgeable, and his ass will be getting booed.
Yeah, if he ain't batting .330, you know they're gonna be all over. They're gonna be all over, but he could take a little pressure.
They're gonna be walking him out there. You can leave today.
Yeah.
You sure you don't want to be traded?
That's crazy.
So, man, we got the college basketball season heating up right now as it's getting towards. We had a big game up this way this past week with the Badgers playing Ohio State. I want to get y'all to get some impressions. That was a hell of a game to watch.
Well,
what were some impressions from that game?
Well, I was watching it, and they were down like by 15. You know, I just didn't put it in. It was on the background, and I was doing some work, and then like I kind of lost the sound. Kind of was melting into the background noise. Then all of a sudden, Vitale erupted. And I looked at the screen, and I was like, "Damn, they are close. They're about to take the lead." And Jordan Taylor put on a clinic. And one of the things I heard Bo Ryan talking about this, because, you know, Wisconsin always gets this, you know, Marcus, you're very close with your brother play there and everything else. But they always got that rap for not being able to come back. You know, once they get down, they kind of like a running football team. You know, if they got down by two touchdowns, they in trouble. And to demonstrate that they're able to come back on a, you know, a very talented team like Ohio State, said a lot about that program. I mean, one of the things about it, I mean, hearing people talk about it, I mean, both got two of the top 15 players probably in the country, you know, top 25 players in the country. And you give him that kind of firepower, you know, he can do some interesting things going down the road. So it's a difficult place to play. And, you know, they just put together defense, the game, they were defending. They defend like a college version of Boston.
You pulled that right out of my head. Like, I swear, I was just thinking about that. I was like, why was this team so successful? And another thing this game, in this game, that's one thing that I observed in this game is that they're extremely physical. They play as physical as a pro team. The only other two programs I think that play this year that I've seen, I haven't seen everybody, so I'll throw that disclaimer out there right now. The only other two programs I've seen that play as physical as they do are Pitt and Michigan State. Now, Michigan State just don't have the horses this year, and they look like they got some chemistry issues. But Pitt, Wisconsin, and Michigan State beat you down when they play you. And I'm sure there's some other teams that fall into that category, but like I said, I ain't seen everybody. So that was one thing. The other thing that I saw, the other main observation I came away with from this game was Sullinger as a pro. Sullinger really, really hurt himself in my eyes as a pro prospect. I don't see that cat the same no more. He got punked. And then to go tweeting about somebody spit on him, somebody spit on him before the game, but he ain't say nothing. And then somebody spit on him after the game, but he ain't do nothing. You spit on me. See, I'm just going to let y'all know. If we ever out in public together, Ray, Devon, and y'all with me, and somebody spit on me at any time during the night, the whole damn establishment is going to know I was spit on. All right? Yep. Because I'm gonna be hauled off in some sort of service vehicle, whether it's some form of law enforcement is gonna have to take me out of that establishment if somebody ever spit on me.
The two things that I got that I took away from this game was the fact that this is exactly the kind of game that Ohio State can lose and get better on. Look for Ohio State to be a better ball team. You know, everybody had them on such a high pedestal that they thought they were the Lakers. They could take a night off, you know, against anybody, and you can't. The other thing that I came away from this game was that Wisconsin is always a good defensive basketball team. And right now, they may be as talented as they've ever been. They may have the offensive talent like they've never had before. And Bo has always been so handcuffy. You know, he's been better than his predecessors at Wisconsin in letting the team open up offensively. But that Ohio State game, he had no choice but to let those guys go. And look what happened. Look what happened. Those guys came down. Not only did they get good looks, they knocked them shots down. You don't come back on a team like Ohio State, down by 15, without being an offensive juggernaut. They came down the court with a mission. They played good basketball. And for the first time in a long time, I saw that control that Bo usually has over his offense slip away. Those guys came down the court and put up some shots. They didn't necessarily go 2, 3, 4 passes deep. They went straight for the juggler to get back in that ball game, and that's not Bo Ryan basketball. That's not the way that he likes to see games played. But I hope that he realizes that he has some offense. You know, he certainly does have, you know, he certainly, in the Big Ten, he's got two of the top players in the league. Use them.
Man, with the way Taylor is playing, man, Taylor, that boy is making a name for himself.
Did it look like he was pissed off that he wasn't nominated for that Naismith Award? It sure looked like he was pissed off to me. It looked like he was pissed off to me. He played ball.
The other thing is, I think people got to stand up and recognize the Kohl Center is a hell of a place to come in and play. I mean, they beat the national championship there last year, and they beat a team that could potentially be playing for the national championship there this year. That is a hell of a place to play.
That's right.
That is a hard place to get a win.
But this team is offensively as gifted as any team Bo has ever had. Let them play. Let them boys play. Let them run.
I think he has been because, you know, Taylor takes a lot of shots that Trayvon would have got yanked for, my brother would have got yanked for.
Yep,
you know,
yep,
he takes
yep.
a lot, but he makes them. He makes them also.
Yep.
But he takes a lot of shots that I think guys in the past years would have got yanked for.
But I think when your brother played, they played too conservative on offense.
But oh, absolutely.
He always, you know, he don't want to win 75-70. He wants to win 45-40. Let him play. Let him play. Shit. Let him get out and run.
He come off that old. He come out of that old school with Hubie Brown and them out of Jersey. You know that we gonna bang it physical. You know, Philadelphia League physical. Yeah, I mean the East Coast stuff, that Eastern League or whatever they had. I mean that's Bo Ryan right there. But I did see some maturity in the offense. In that, you know, one of the things I always was worried about historically, because of how the players evolved, is the ability to create something when you need it. And sometimes you try to make a charge back. You got to have a cat who can sometimes break away from the offense and create scores. And that's what I saw Taylor doing. That shot he hit down on the left side of the floor, down there out of bounds. He was able to kind of do it. I thought Trayvon towards the end of the season last year had a little bit of freedom with that. But there are times if you're going to go to that next level, because that style of play can sometimes get you to the Elite Eight, get you to the Final Four. But what's going to win you championships is that cat who can do that in the moment.
Yep.
And that stuff you got to do throughout a
course. That's what they haven't had in quite a while.
Yeah.
I think they've had it. Bo just handcuffs it.
That's
Bo
true.
Wants, you know, and you can't
that's
come
true.
Down. When you're down 15 points, you can't come down and run the offense. Not Bo's offense. Bo's offense wants four passes. Bo's offense has looks, you know, after that third or fourth pass. That's fine if you're up. That's fine if you're close. But when you're down 15 points, you better get your ass down there and shoot. You know, one pass, get it to the guy that can take it to the cup, let him create something, and get your ass back down on defense and play defense like you know you can. You got to shoot that ball within that first 10 seconds of that offense, not try to string it out. You know, and that's... And when they did string it out, it turned into a 3-point shot that, you know, that kept them in the ball game. You can't come back on a team like Ohio State by running a conservative offense. It's not going to happen. And it got so that offense got away from Bo, and he looked like a genius. You know, he should have went back in the locker room and went, damn, you know, we got to do this more often. You know.
That's
how
good.
You let players play. You know, when you're down 15 points at home to Ohio State, what the hell do you have to lose? Turn your back.
Yeah.
Let them play.
Yeah. You know, I think when you start looking at that.
Wait.
Hello?
Oh, did I lose anybody?
I think we might have lost.
Hello.
I
lost Ray.
No, I mean,
Ray?
I don't know what happened.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I don't know what happened either.
You're a weird thought. Because I would say that as we start looking at this college season, you know, Texas will probably be that number one. Kansas took on a chin against K-State. Look, Ohio State pretty much drowned Michigan State today. We get a chance maybe next week to talk about what's going on at Michigan State. Marcus, maybe we'll give you some help me understand. I know they got rid of Lucius or whatever, but they should be as bad as they are.
What did happen there?
Man, it
what
just seems like they got some poor chemistry, man. Poor chemistry. In college sports, poor chemistry can kill talent. I mean, it just can't.
Sure.
They're not pros. They don't know how to just strap it up and go in and do their job every day. If you got cats not getting along and not enjoying playing together, that's the thing about playing college ball. You got to enjoy playing with your teammates. If you don't enjoy playing together, the success is going to be limited.
Because in the pros, you know, at the end of the game, you get in your car and you drive off. In college, you get on that bus and you go back to your dorm. You got to look
right.
at that dude. You know? You got to look at that guy.
Yeah, and then you got to answer questions from people all week.
Right.
That's the other thing. You know, you're a pro. You go home, you go in your house, you shut your door, you can turn the TV off. You ain't got to hear it. But in college, you go back to the dorm, and people asking you all types of questions is, well, why coach ain't giving you the ball, or why coach running this play, or why coach doing this, or why coach doing that? And you got to answer all those questions, you know, and people sometimes don't know when to just shut the hell up. And when you got bad chemistry, all of that gets exacerbated.
You know, you're only going to play 30 games a season, so, I mean, you got 3 or 4 days to wait before you can get back out there and make amends. In the NBA,
yep.
You just go back out there the next night. You can save face the next night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks like we wrapped it up. We all here at the end, gentlemen.
Yeah. So why don't y'all give y'all final shout-outs real quick?
That NFL, get it right. Don't lose momentum.
Albert, I love you, but I ain't giving you $300 million.
Carmelo, if you're really bad, sign that contract. Sign that contract. Stay in them if you're really bad. You want to throw that out there at the end. Well, all right, listeners, y'all have a good night. Same time next week, 10 to 12. Real Blog Talk Radio, Real Sports Guys.
That's it.
All right, we out.
Hey, I missed you guys.
Hey, missed you too, man.
Oh, my goodness. This was energy.
Yeah, man. We're glad to have you back, man.
I'm riding home from work tonight trying to figure out what kind of time I had, and they were still talking about their pool holes, and I'm like, you can't pay him $300 million?
Yeah, no, you can't, man. Not at 31.
That's a third of a billion. Sound like your NFL team.
I'm like, seriously? Yeah. I'm like, when is reason come into it? You know, and that's what Russo was trying to say. You know, there's more things that you need to be thinking about when you're looking at a contract than just money. You know, you got to think about situation and things like that. That's why he started putting it on the players, even putting the pressure on him and things like that. But I mean, yeah, you got to be realistic. Now, if you're talking about $30 million for 6 years, now we can talk.
Right.
You know, I know there might be 1 year at the end or two where I might be paying you, overpaying you, but, you know, we have to do that for what you've done. I can give you a little bit for what you've done.
Right.
I can give you three or four years.
I'm not paying you for what you've done. I've paid you for that. You got to get the contract now. You got to get the contract
now. You ain't been getting checked the last 10 years?
Right.
You've been paid for that.
What's the matter?
We even.
No, I'm not.
We squared up on that.
I'm not paying you for what, you know, I'm projecting what I think you might be able to do and what your full value may be. I'm going to give you the opportunity to make you the $30 million that you want. I'm just simply going to guarantee 15 of it. That's all, Albert. I'm going to give you the incentive to make that 30. I'll be glad to pay you. I'll be glad to give it to you, Al. But I just can't give it to you if you don't hit 30 and you don't get them 100 RBIs and you don't get those 100 runs. And let's face it, if you get 30 home runs every year, the other two will fall into place. I don't care how you want to look at it.
Right.
It's just that when you're 41 years old, I don't see you hitting 30 home runs. And if you do, I'm going to pay you. I'll be glad to pay you.
And that's where you might have to have the first 5 or 6 years at $30 million guaranteed in those last 4 years like that.
Because where's Albert from?
I want to say Puerto Rico, but I could just be making that up.
Dominican?
Is he Dominican?
Yeah. Someplace. So he could buy the island with $300 million. Be like Pacquiao out there.
That's a lot of coconuts. It ain't like I'm trying to break it, Albert. But it just, you know, at some point you got to think it's a respect thing, you know. He deserves to be paid like A-Rod, you know. That's what it's really all about, you know, from Albert's perspective. If you're going to pay A-Rod 25 a year, I should be worth 30. That's what it's coming down to. And he's right.
Right.
He's right. But it doesn't mean that they paid A-Rod what he's worth. you know, or what,
right.
or A-Rod is worth what they're paying him.
Right. So you want to be more over. You want to be. You want to be more paid than the overpaid cat.
Right. And so don't tell me how much you love St. Louis. You gonna do this to St. Louis?
Yeah.
You know. You.
Yeah. See.
You know,
and see. That's where he can't get into that kind of conversation. He can't get into that kind of talk because it's just say I'm trying to get my money and you know I would like to stay here, but if they can't give me the money, I'm gonna get my money from somebody else. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to get my money.
Know.
Don't get to talking about how I love the community and love the team and all that kind of riffraff, because then people gonna use that against you. Because your behavior is going to be contradictory.
Right. How old are you, Marcus?
30.
30. And if you were to play ball like you did when you were 24 until you're 30, you would probably be playing at a higher level by the time you got to 30.
Right.
And something in your mind would tell you, I can do this for another 10 years. Something
right.
in your mind would tell you that, even though
exactly.
reality isn't that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, nah, I got to go to the doctor tomorrow.
Know.
I hurt my knee.
I got
a little knee injury. I got to figure out what's going on, man.
Right.
It ain't,
you know,
I ain't bouncing back like I used to.
Yep.
You know, but
and
he
and
wasn't worth the same money.
You look at what happened with Revis, but I write you the check, now you're hammy holding you down. Now you're injured, all that money. You're sitting on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Hurt. I can't have $30 million on the sidelines. Now you can
right.
hold all these injuries. We got to have something in here to protect the organization.
Right.
You don't play 50% of the game. If you don't hit 30 home runs, you know, you got either the money guaranteed, but if you don't hit those things, the money deducted. We can
mm-hmm.
call it however you want to do it. You know,
right.
you know, like I say, Albert Pujols, I want you to be the face of this franchise for another 10 years. I'm going to guarantee you 15. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money, you know, and I'm going to give you the incentive to make 30 plus every year. And that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair money. So when you're 41 years old and maybe you're not hitting 30, maybe you're only hitting 22 home runs, you're still going to make more than 15, you know, but you could also blow out a knee and I'd be obligated to pay you. I want to do that. And that's what I'm paying. That's what I'm back paying for. That's the only thing I'm back paying for. Otherwise, we square. I paid you last year. We'll pay you this year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, fellas, I gotta get going, fellas. They done closed down the schools up here, man. 50% of the teachers and called in sick. Yeah, we ain't
really?
Playing up here, man. Yeah, we ain't playing up here.
I know. They don't mess with the wrong people, boy.
Yeah, we ain't playing up here.
Is that the Skywalker flu? Is that the Skywalker
hey,
flu?
Yeah, we got that Skywalker. We got that Skywalker cough.
Oh.
Ain't come to work today, boss. Trying to take all money.
Man, I don't understand how Republicans can be elected. I just don't get it.
Seriously, man.
How a working man could go in there and pull that lever for a Republican. This is what you get.
I'm telling you.
This is what
I've been telling people all week. If they pass this legislation, the first people that need to get fired, the first educators that need to get fired, the first public servants that need to get fired is the people that voted for this sucker. They need to be the first
right.
ones to give up their jobs. Because this is what they signed
That's
up
That's right.
For. I didn't sign up
this
for
is, this. This is ridiculous. This is exactly it. You know, you don't ever hear people talking about moderate Republicans. You know, Bill Clinton was a moderate Democrat. He reached across the aisle.
Right.
Barack Obama
right.
is slowly becoming a moderate Democrat. You ain't hear nobody talk about a moderate Republican.
They don't
you
know, have
never
to do
heard
that.
Called a moderate Republican. You know, they have big business in mind. They have, you know, they'll cut your throat.
And my thing is, man, if this is dude's first, if this is what he's starting out with, what other crazy shit he got lined up? You know what I'm saying? Like, if he get this through, he gonna be sitting back like, oh, I could do whatever the hell I want to these people now.
Because
this is crazy.
Put the money back to the government for the railroad, for the trail, for the railway. Yeah, I mean, it's,
but
it's all.
But what's scary, fellas, and what you have to realize is that this may be the sign of politics to come. As these baby boomers age, and without enough people coming up behind them, this is the type of government you're going to be looking at. These people that are retired, they don't give a shit if teachers make money or not. They ain't got no kids in school.
Right.
Hey, I saw the writing on the wall, man. I saw the writing on the wall at the end of last year. I saw so many social workers and school people retiring. I was like, man, why is everybody retiring so quick, man? What's up with that? You know, people started jumping off the boat. You started to look at what's wrong with the boat. You know what I mean? Like,
you know,
there's a lot of people.
You know, when he gave that money back for the rail, that was just, that is so short-sighted. You know,
and ignorant.
You have to, it's ignorant. Mass transit is the way this country has to go. Whether we like it or not, the luxury we have, everybody owning a car, every family owning two, is got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Fossil fuel is drying up.
Yeah.
You know, the U.S. peaked in 1972. We were producing 10 billion gallons of oil a day. Now we're producing 5.
You know, it's like I was at this conference last week. And this woman is talking about kids with anxiety. And eventually she gets to talking about kids with social anxiety, how kids nowadays don't know how to talk to people. And then she goes on talking about how it's such a shame that we don't teach cursive in schools no more. You know why we don't teach cursive? Because ain't nobody using it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like the same thing. It's like people hold on to these ideas like a fossil fuel and this stuff because that's how we used to do it. We don't need to do that no more. We got some other stuff to do. You know what I mean? Kids ain't writing in cursive no more because kids ain't writing. And that's just the way it is.
Right.
And it's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It just is. It's just
you
got to
move on.
You're right.
You know,
let that go.
You know,
it's the same thing with fossil fuel. Let it go.
You know, if we don't start developing alternative means, what we have is not going to be here. This world is going to change. And if you don't latch on to ideas that are progressive, like a rail, then you're going to be behind. Wisconsin is going to be behind the rest of the country in this rail project because our governor
and we could have been at the forefront.
Exactly.
Who knows what type of industry we could have brought to the middle of the state, to the northern part of the state, you know, to all these other parts of the state that don't, where people don't have access to, where somebody would have put a plant, or we could have had a Silicon Valley type set up somewhere in the state. Well, now you're busting in computer workers and technology workers or green workers or whatever. You're getting people on the train going in and going all across the state. It's just short-sighted and stupid and ignorant, and like it's not 1942.
You know, you
well, especially with the changes in Illinois with the hike and the income taxes and stuff, and now businesses are looking to move to Wisconsin. If you're doing that rail project, now you create an opportunity for some influx of businesses, you know, because you couldn't foreshadow. Well, I mean, he probably should have known, being in the circle, that Illinois was going to raise taxes at that level. You know, now you got nothing but business people saying they're going to cross the line to Wisconsin. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
but
all that short
but again, I see Scott Walker as a Ronald Reagan type, you know, candidate. He's a puppet for money. He's a puppet for all these.
He is.
He's a puppet.
He absolutely is.
He's a puppet.
And that's why he's trying to bust up the union. That's why he's trying to bust up the union so he can have the flexibility to do whatever the hell he wants with the public sector. So if you ain't got no unions, you ain't got no grievance process, you ain't got no bargaining, you can raise salary, you can lower salary, and you ain't got to answer to nobody. And that's right.
And when it's bumped up in the public, when it's bumped up at the state level, you know, the Teamsters don't have a chance. The UAW workers don't have a chance. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
It's over.
It's not like we got some people who are sick tomorrow, so we'll see.
Yeah, the Madison teachers didn't shut it down.
I like that. I like that.
Hey, you got to stand for something to fall for anything.
That's right. But again, I just realized that those that are not in the public sector, you know, or the state sector, are sitting out here going, "This is amazing. This is unfounded. This is incredibly insane." You know.
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
I'm cool with pitching in and cutting back and tightening my belt and pitching in on my own insurance and pitching in on my own pension. You know, it's not something that I want to do, but I understand it's something that made me a necessity. But then when you go and try to take away my right to organize and my right to collectively bargain and to have a union, you didn't step over the line 7-8 feet.
Yeah, he didn't even want to go to the table.
You didn't hop over the line. And now you're doing a little dance on the wrong side of the line. Like, come on now. I can give on a little check stuff, you know, take a little more out of my check. I can give on that. But when you start telling me I can't collectively bargain and you putting caps on how much I can make, and you're taking away way too much.
You guys are doing it right. I think you guys are doing it smart. Start now. Don't wait.
Yeah.
Because tomorrow, that family, that guy that's going to go to work tomorrow, or who thought he was going to work tomorrow, whose problem this wasn't, you know, the guy that thought, you know, I'm going to go deliver the milk because this ain't my problem. Now he's got to stay home and watch his kids. This is his problem now.
Right.
This is his problem now. He's going to look at this a hell of a lot different tomorrow.
Yep.
You know.
And honestly, if my trash don't get picked up, next week, I ain't gonna be mad at them neither.
No,
you know, the sanitation worker, we ain't collecting no trash neither. Hey, do what you gotta do. I feel you. Let me know where to stand. I'll come out there and stand with you too.
That's right. We'll turn this shit into we'll be up in there like Algiers. We'll be up in there like Cairo.
Hey, I'm telling you. Hey, I've been telling people all week. I got a bag of rocks. Ready to slang at that Capitol building. Show me your tank.
Don't be doing that. They show me straight to Cairo.
Point me to the tank. Boy, because that's why he called in the National Guard quick.
Well, that's why he also
called in the National Guard quick.
Like,
hey, we ain't going to have no Egypt type situation out here. I got the guard on. Yeah, I got him on call.
Well, that's why he didn't mess with them police unions, because he wants somebody up there that, you know, they ain't throwing rocks.
Oh, yeah. You know, he ain't mess with the police or the firefighters. He need that emergency service in case things get a little crazy. You got to sneak out the back door. You're going to need somebody to draw cover.
Well, gentlemen, we will see.
Yeah. But it was good having you back, Ray.
Like I say, I was riding over to work.
Since I got a free day tomorrow, I'm gonna get that. I'm gonna get that attorney going on Facebook, man. See if we can get some people.
Okay.
Got some smack. But if y'all want to, if y'all get a chance, email me a list of guys that y'all think should be added. Otherwise, I'm gonna just throw up. Well, what I may do is I may come up with a list of guys and then shoot that to y'all, and then y'all could say, "Oh, you forgot this guy," or "What about this dude?" I just want to put together some interesting matchups that I think are gonna cause people to have a little bit of debate.
Well, put them up, and then we can debate them from there.
All right.
Go ahead and put them up, that, you know.
All right.
And then we can get in the debate, and everybody else can get in the debate against all of us.
Yeah.
You know.
Cool.
Voice their opinions against all of us.
Yeah. Excellent. So, yeah, I will catch up with y'all tomorrow on Facebook.
Okay.
Otherwise,
you feeling
y'all
better.
Yeah. I'm trying to get rid of this Scott Walker. You know, it's kind of like smallpox.
All right.
Itching in my pockets. All right, man. Y'all take care. All right.
You too.
Right,
bye.